So for the last couple months, I've been doing a series on home front cooking during World War II, and I've covered several of the Allied countries, but today I'm going to be covering one of the Axis powers, Germany. And I'll be making a fennel and potato casserole that would have been eaten by the average German citizen during the war. So thank you to Bombas for sponsoring this video as we try to survive on the German home front, this time on Tasting History. Today's recipe comes from the 1941 edition of the woman's magazine Frauenwarte, which was put out by the party in charge of Germany then, a party whose name I will not be saying in this video because of the YouTube algorithm. Now the recipe is for Fenchel-Kartoffel-Auflauf, or fennel and potato casserole, and it says, if necessary, remove the outer leaves of the fennel bulbs and cut off the green ones. Then cut them and the raw peeled potatoes into slices. Layer them in a greased baking dish, alternating with salt and caraway and the finely chopped fennel greens. The top layer is potatoes. Pour the milk whisked with an egg and a tablespoon of yeast flakes over it, sprinkle with caraway and yeast flakes, and bake the casserole for about 1 hour. Serve with pickled beets or green salad. Now, since this recipe does come from fairly early on in the war, it reflects the fact that you were expected to still be able to get milk and eggs, which later on would be very difficult to come by. Even potatoes, the mainstay of the diet at times, were kind of hard to find. Later editions of the magazine have recipes that pretty much drop all things like butter and milk and really rely on vegetables and lesser cuts of meat or sausage. Like one recipe from December of 1943 called Billiges Abendbrot, or cheap dinner, which is basically just potatoes, onion, and sausage boiled with some brown gravy made from rye flour. Another thing you'll note is in those recipes, wheat flour is pretty much gone and replaced with rye flour and barley flour. And most of the dishes are a one-pot meal, or Eintopf, basically a stew of vegetables and inexpensive meat or sausage, if you could even find it. Eating this dish was something made popular even before the war with a campaign from the party called Eintopf Sonntag, or Stew Sunday, which dictated that everyone should eat this inexpensive stew every Sunday. That same afternoon, members of the party would go around and forcibly collect money saved from making the dish, and then this was given to charity, a sort of compulsory donation freeing up the party to spend its funds on war preparations. When the war broke out, they changed the name to Opfersonntag, or Sacrifice Sunday, but it was essentially the same thing. A stew, albeit cheap, that could keep you nice and warm. And something else that can keep you nice and warm are these wonderful slippers from today's sponsor, Bombas. So if you haven't heard of Bombas, they are a fantastic sock company, which also sells underwear, t-shirts, and of course, slippers. Slippers like these that will pretty much stay on my feet most of the holiday season, because they are just so cozy. Just ask Milo, he loves them too. I also have several of their socks, including a few pair of these compression socks, which I love compression socks in general, but if you do a lot of travel and fly, compression socks are like the must-have item. They make flying such a better experience. They just, when you land and your feet all get swollen, it doesn't happen with compression socks. They're great. And one thing that I really love about Bombas, besides their socks and slippers, is that for every pair that they sell, they donate one item. And they've already donated 100 million items to those in need. So feel good and do good with Bombas by knowing that every item that you purchase will not only keep your feet nice and comfy, but they'll do some good in the world. And right now, new customers will get 20% off of their first purchase when they visit bombas.com/tastinghistory and use my code TASTINGHISTORY20. That's TASTINGHISTORY20 at bombas.com/tastinghistory. Now, for this recipe, what you'll need is a large bulb of fennel with the greens, 2 1/4 pound or 1 kilogram of potatoes. I used Yukon Gold because they do tend to hold their shape a little bit better than a starchy potato like a russet. About 1 1/3 cup or 330 milliliters of whole milk, 1 egg, 1/4 cup or 30 grams of flour, 2 tablespoons of yeast flakes. You can find them here in the US, but here we call them nutritional yeast. Some caraway seeds and salt. Both the seeds and the salt are really to taste, but I used about 2 teaspoons of each. So first, wash and peel your potatoes, and then slice them into rounds about 1/8 to 1/4 inch thick. Then soak them in some water for about 15 minutes. And while they soak, cut the fennel bulb from the stalks on the top, then slice it into 4 quarters and remove the center core. Then slice the fennel bulb into thin slices. As for the greens, strip them from the stalk and finely chop them. Then get a casserole dish and grease it with either butter or some other fat. Fats, including butter and margarine, were very hard to come by throughout the war, so use them sparingly. Then lay down a layer of the potatoes on the bottom of the dish, add a layer of the fennel bulb with the potatoes, and then generously sprinkle the top with salt and some of the caraway seeds. You can also use ground caraway. The recipe is not specific, but note that caraway is a strong flavor, so don't go overboard. Then add a sprinkle of the chopped fennel greens and repeat this layering of potato, fennel bulb, salt, caraway, and fennel greens, finishing with a layer of the potatoes on top. Then in a bowl, add the egg to the milk and whisk it until it is nice and smooth, and then add 1 tablespoon of the yeast flakes and stir those in. And here I made a decision that may not be correct, I'm not entirely sure, because the list of ingredients in the recipe includes flour, but the directions never mention flour again, so I'm not exactly sure where the flour is used. And I look at some modern versions of this, and they don't even use flour. So I added it to this mixture, but I'm not entirely sure that was right. Once everything is whisked in, pour it evenly over the dish, making sure to coat the potatoes. Then sprinkle more caraway on top, along with the other tablespoon of yeast flakes. Then cover it and set it in the oven at 350 degrees Fahrenheit, 175 Celsius, and bake it for 1 hour. And you can take the lid off in that last 10 minutes just to let it brown a little bit on top. Now, as it bakes, I'd ask you to make sure you're subscribed to Tasting History if you're not already, as we delve into what the German people were eating on the home front during World War II. So I'm recording this after I actually recorded and edited the rest of the video that you're about to watch, because I wanted to give a sort of disclaimer. I found it, in making this episode, very difficult to separate the people on the German home front who were not directly involved with the atrocities going on, and the people who were directly involved in the atrocities going on. Partly because, involved or not, the people benefited from many of these atrocities, at least when it came to food. The Germans were eating relatively well most of the war because they were stealing food from many of the occupied countries. And while I will talk about some of those specific food-related atrocities, there are other atrocities that we know were taking place that I'm not going to be discussing in this video because they just don't have anything to do directly with the topic. So as you're watching, if I talk about something and you're like, well, there's a lot of context missing, know that I did my best to cover everything, but in a 20-minute video, it's just impossible to talk about absolutely everything. But I wanted to make this video because I do think, especially since I'm making a whole series on World War II homefront eating, you can't leave out Germany. So with that said, here's the history portion of this video. Rationing in Germany didn't technically start until the war began in 1939, but eating as if they were going to war began some years earlier. It's impossible to know exactly when, in the minds of the leaders, they knew that they were going to be starting a war. But by 1936, they were definitely making preparations. This was when the 4-year plan, an economic plan made to ready the country for war, was put into action. This included the rapid rearmament of Germany, which took many farmers away from the fields and brought them into better-paying manufacturing jobs. As Hermann Göring, who oversaw much of the plan, said in a speech, "Guns will make us powerful, butter will only make us fat." The irony here being that Göring was notorious for later on going to restaurants during rationing and eating an entire week's worth of rations for a normal citizen in one meal. But while guns are necessary for war, so is food, so is butter. And the fact that about 50% of the country's butter and margarine and almost all of their oils came from outside of the country, that was going to be a problem once they headed to war. So in 1939, Walter Dahre, the Minister of Food and Agriculture, working with Herbert Backe, prepared the country's food supply for war. The plan was to make Germany completely self-sufficient, so they wouldn't have to rely on any other countries to feed their people. And this meant in 1939, there was a lot of stockpiling of food from those other countries. Supposedly, the preparations would work as long as the German food supply remained intact and the war was fairly short. But if the war was prolonged or there were any failed harvests, that wouldn't be great. And spoiler alert, both of those things happened. So Germany was going to then have to find other places to get their food from. But at the start, everything was to remain hunky-dory and the citizens were to be well fed. Because at the end of World War I, one of the reasons that Germany lost the war was an entire collapse of the food supply system. The winter of 1916 and 1917 was known as the turnip winter because turnips, the food generally fed to animals at the time, were about all there was to eat. And by the end of the war, even those were running low, and Germany's long-running boast that it couldn't be starved out no longer applied. This lack of food and military losses led to civil unrest, and the people turned against the Kaiser, and like that, the war was over. Now, obviously, it was much more complicated than that, but essentially, no food, low morale, bad for any war, and bad for the government. So, the new government was determined that this time, things would be different. So when the war finally broke out on September 1st, 1939, rationing went into effect, and citizens were given a set amount of butter, milk, cheese, fats, meat, sugar, and jam. And a few weeks later on September 25th, bread and eggs were added. Mondays and Fridays were also proclaimed meatless days, even for restaurants. But while the amount of these products were set, the German citizens were actually in many cases getting even more calories than they had been getting before the war. Of course, the diet was much more monotonous because it had to be all made of things grown at least inside of Europe. So anything imported like coffee or chocolate or bananas were all but impossible to get. As Ursula Mahlendorf, who was a child in Germany during this period, later wrote, "Breakfast and supper at our house usually consisted of bread and marmalade or evil-tasting margarine. Dinners were monotonous. Most days we had Eintopf, a casserole of potatoes and various vegetables boiled in bouillon and thickened with flour." The rationing system was notoriously complex because unlike the rationing that was done in Britain and the US, not everybody got the same amount. Industrial workers got a lot more food than many other people. Additionally, about a third of the country was not even part of the rationing system. A lot of people who lived in rural villages were considered self-sustaining. Basically, they had access to farm-grown food and everything, so they didn't need the guarantee of food from the government. Now, sometimes this meant that they actually ate a lot better than their city-dwelling counterparts, but sometimes it did not, because often the government would come in and take 100% of the food that had been grown, leaving them basically with nothing. There was also, of course, a segment of the population who was part of the rationing system, but were kept on near starvation amounts of food. These were, of course, the Jewish population, as well as the Poles, the Slavs, and prisoners of war that came into Germany for forced labor. But for the rest of the population, the average German citizen, they would be given a series of ration cards. Harry Flannery, an American journalist living in Berlin during the first years of the war, wrote that each card was a different color. There were blue cards for meat, yellow for fat and cheese, white for sugar and marmalade, green for eggs, orange for bread, pink for flour, rice, cream of wheat, oatmeal, tea, and coffee substitutes, and purple for candy, nuts, and fruits. Now, even though, at least at first, there was enough food to go around, the system was a little bit clunky, so there were often shortages at certain locations, and pretty much everywhere there were long lines. And this led to some disgruntled people, both customers and shopkeepers alike. So Gertrud Schulz-Klink, the head of the Women's League, fashioned a series of 10 commandments that were posted in shops. These included things like 1. The shopping housewife shall not lose her temper if the article she wants doesn't happen to be in stock. 4. She shall not start racing from store to store to grab things just before closing time. Or 9. The shopkeeper will not show his personal sympathies and antipathies too plainly. As I mentioned before, this plan of making sure everyone had enough food was going to work as long as there were no poor harvests. But only 5 months into the war, there was a decidedly poor harvest of potatoes, basically the staple crop. It was due to bad weather. This was coupled with a labor shortage because 1.5 million people who had been working on the farms were drafted or else volunteered for the military. Harvest also continued to be poor due to a lack of equipment and nitrogen-rich fertilizer as the raw materials were being diverted to the production of military equipment. But the government had a plan: take over more territory. And anything in those territories would be brought home for the German people. As Göring told the leaders of the occupied territories in a meeting in 1942, if anyone has to go hungry, it shall not be the Germans, but other peoples. One stark example of this was in Greece, where nearly all of the country's food production, which was already beleaguered, was confiscated by the Wehrmacht and either eaten by them or sent back to Germany. And so during the winter of 1941 and 1942, 300,000 people starved to death. In the autumn of 1941, Greeks were living on just over 450 calories a day, and by winter, it had dropped to 180, less than 2 slices of bread per day. One message from the island of Syros to the government in Athens simply said, "Send us either bread or coffins." Then, of course, there was, as I talked about in the video on the Soviet Union, Der Hungerplan, or the Hunger Plan. This was a plan put in place during the invasion of the Soviet Union, whereby all of the food produced in places like Ukraine and Western Russia would be confiscated and sent back to Germany. And this did alleviate the German food shortages for a while. Elisabeth Dürr, who was living in Germany at this time, much later wrote, "This time we robbed the occupied countries, and our people did not have to go hungry until the end of the war." The invasion of other countries also addressed the labor shortage. POWs from places like Ukraine, Poland, France, and the Soviet Union were sent to live in rural Germany, where they were forced to work on farms, though they did so on the near-starvation rations that I mentioned before. A Jewish Austrian, Edith Hahn, had been sent to Germany to work on an asparagus farm in 1942, and noted that it quickly became clear that the Germans were interested in using our strength, but not in preserving it. We were always ravenous, surrounded by bounty and aching with hunger. There were factions in the party that didn't condone this, though it wasn't because they were essentially committing war crimes, but rather because they did not like the fact that Germans, especially German women, were working that closely with people that they found inferior. And it really became a problem when there were reports that these people were living in their houses basically as family. But even with exploiting the POWs and taking food from the occupied territories, by the winter of 1942, the government was having trouble keeping its promise to have their citizens fed fully. And by the winter of 1943, people were eating 60% less meat, 20% less bread, and 40% less fat than they had been when the war began. And after one cut in the meat ration in 1943, the Ministry of Food released a statement saying, "The recent reduction, however painful it may have been to housewives, was inevitable. At any rate, whether we like it or not, we shall have to rely upon potatoes and vegetables for any improvement in our food position." The problem was that the meat and the potatoes were intrinsically linked. Before the war, pork and potatoes were the mainstay of the German diet. Both were ingredients that they had plenty of. But the potatoes were also the main food for the pigs. So when there was a potato shortage, it led to less pork. And with less pork available, the government had people eat more potatoes. This led to fewer potatoes, which led to fewer pigs, which led to fewer potatoes, and it was a vicious cycle until there really weren't enough of either. But even with the food shortages, the German people were actually still eating far better than most of the people in Europe at the time. But that was not to last. Because in 1944, with the Russians retaking much of the land in the east, and with the Allied invasion in the west well underway, Germany really did have to become self-sufficient for their food. But when British and American bombers began targeting the storage facilities and transportation systems in Germany itself, the country's ability to produce and distribute food was crippled. And it was around this time that the rationing system began to collapse. So when you would take your ration card into a shop, they wouldn't honor it. They didn't have any food to give you. So people relied more on the gardens that they were growing, similar to the Victory Gardens in England and America, or the food that they were raising. People were raising things like chickens and rabbits in their apartments or on their balconies. In cities, markets often had to replace their vegetables with things like the tops of sugar beets and nettles, and they would still charge way, way too much for them. And the government encouraged teachers to take their children out into the fields and scrounge for weeds and roots and other edible grasses. In the final days of the war in 1945, the even meager food supply that there was pretty much dried up. A Frenchman who had been sent as a forced laborer to live in Berlin wrote about the city becoming surrounded by the Russians. "We were in the middle of the battlefield. All around us and up in the sky, the war was raging. We just had one concern: eating. The daily soup was no longer being distributed, and everyone had to find their own food." Oddly enough, in the west and south of Germany, there were often towns that the Allies would enter, and they would have abundant food supplies, as if the war had never happened. So I guess how you ate in Germany at this time really depended on where you were. And so I'm curious, maybe in the south and the west, people were still able to make dishes like this fennel and potato casserole, which I'm about ready to eat. And here we are. Fenchel-Kartoffel-Auflauf from the World War II German home front. So the original recipe says that it should be served with either pickled beets or green salad. I chose beets, though I couldn't find like large pickled beets. All I could find were these baby beets, which were cute. It's really good. I love pickled beets. As for the casserole, here we go. Flavor of caraway really hits you. So caraway and fennel both have this slight anise flavor. They have other flavors there too, but they do both have that kind of licorice-y flavor, which I'm not a huge fan of, though I do like fennel. But that is the overwhelming flavor. There's not much else to it. The potatoes don't really taste. They're just there for texture and to fill you up. So you're getting the flavor of the fennel and the caraway. What this needs, because it is kind of dry. It's not too dry, like it's palatable, but what it needs is cheese. I think today if you made it, you put some cheese on there and it would be an absolutely wonderful dish, or just some more milk or maybe heavy cream, something to just kind of give it a little bit more moisture. That said, the flavor is pretty good, especially if you do like that flavor. And you know, if you're eating this during wartime, you wouldn't notice a huge difference in how you were eating from the before times, I would think. Later on, things did get different, but the recipes, at least, were like, everything is fine. One more interesting thing that I found while I was doing research was a propaganda film from 1941 called The English Disease, and it was about rickets, a disease that often children get, and it's all about how to make it so your children don't get this disease. It says give them lots of fresh air and sunlight, and a diet rich in vitamins is also a great value for the child's healthy development. Grated raw carrots, spinach, and lettuce are especially important for a young child. But it's why they called it the English disease that I found interesting. See, the video claimed that during World War I, the British government intentionally caused an epidemic of rickets in Germany. How exactly they did that, they do not say. But they do say that because of that, during this war, it is imperative that the English disease can never become a German disease. So eat your veggies, get some sunlight, don't get rickets, and make sure, if you haven't, watch the other videos in the series on the US, the UK, and the USSR. I have at least one more in this series, gonna be on Japan, and actually another British video coming up. So yeah, and I will see you next time on Tasting History.